Bris. I mean, God never forgets.
You mean the rainbow.
I understand what it's referring to, but I'm saying, like, God doesn't forget. What does it mean he's going to remember now?
Okay. I mean, it seems to be saying that God will need something to remind him.
Right.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Okay, what do you guys... This is not the only... This is a general kind of question, because you can find other cases where God is being depicted as acting in a manner which would be appropriate to people, having, you know, something concrete. I mean, all right, so fine. That's a good point, though. It does say, you know, that God remembered. It says it by Psalm, that God remembered Abraham, and that's why he saved Lot. Something to that effect. You'll find that. That the Torah would use that expression, that God remembered. Or, you know, when...
That he remembered that he was in the Teva.
That's a good point.
Because over there, the whole plan was to save the guy initially.
Yeah, that's a good question. Where do we find that? All right, that's good. Relax. Where do we find that? Come on, that's good. I like to hear the source. Just to nail it down. I'm sorry, what?
What are you asking? Which pasuk it is?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, one second.
That's close to Allah.
Perek Tes Pasuk Aleph.
He said Het.
No, it doesn't say it in Tes Aleph.
No, Het.
One.
Et Kimesach Yizkola Chaya. Yizkola Behema Shita Bateva. Ayaver Elokim Rachal Arad. Ayashoku Amayim. This is interesting. This is, I think, even in a sense, a more challenging pasuk. Because I think the same idea. That's basically what Yosef is saying. That this seems to be introducing the fact that God was now, after the Mavo had achieved its purpose of destroying the world, so now God remembered Noah. That God, so to speak, began the second process of diminishing the flood and removing it so that Noah could actually continue, you know, regular human existence to restore the world, replenish the world. But the way it's being presented, the implication is that, so to speak, obviously, kivyachol, that it's conceivable that God wouldn't have done it. It's like God remembers. You only say that, remembering. See, the idea of remembering is something which applies to man. I don't think it can be applied to God in truth. Because the idea that you remembered makes sense only in a being that's subject to shikha. And we say about God that ain't shikcha l'fnei chisei hodecha. There is no forgetting. So you really can't say that God remembers. That doesn't make sense. God knows. God can't forget. And in addition, the secondary thing is that it seems to imply that that it requires some type of remembering in order for Noah to be saved. But I think this is also what Yosef was saying, was that this is part of the original idea. That it shouldn't be presented as like phase two. Now we'll see about Noah. It should have been it's clear that Noah was a chayim. So the whole idea of building the Teva was that he shouldn't be destroyed. Now we assume that he wasn't going to live the rest of his life on the Teva, that wouldn't make any sense. It meant he was saved and mankind would be restored through him. So that's just the natural result. But the way the pasuk is describing it, it appears that it's not a natural result. Okay, that's the question. Well, let's deal with the first case of the case of remembering by the rainbow seems to be a little bit different. Am I correct? Seems a little bit different because the question over there is not just the remembering, but the remembering is triggered by seeing the rainbow. So that's an additional problem. What's the idea? It's one thing to remember, But okay, fine. So what does it mean that God remembers? But that's completely not dependent upon anything external. Here the impression is being given that it's dependent upon the rainbow. I mean, what does God need the rainbow for? I think that's the question. Am I correct?
Yes.
Okay, so go ahead. Yes. Okay, so the catch us first. That's test the whole description over there. That's Kashti. Asati Ba'anan. Ray Sala Ost Brit. Sangi Yuvain Art. Well, read through the certain carefully. Does it actually say that? That God will be remembering it, will be reminded because of the Kesha? Alright. I'm going to give you a few seconds to look it over and think it over. Then we'll continue.
He knows about it now, but so what, you know, why wouldn't he know about it later? So I have to say that, and he knows that at you know.
Are you talking about a human being?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
A human being makes a sign?
A human being makes a sign, so the question is, why does he need to make a sign? If he knows about it now, why wouldn't he know about it later? So I have to say that because.
Hold on a second, let me just give you my response. Because we're subject to forgetting. Because we're still forgetting. The reason why a person makes a sign is because. If you know about something now, but obviously that's the way your mind functions. This is in your attention now, but then other things come up, and your attention is diverted from that. And while your attention is on something else, it's very possible you're not going to think about that. So therefore, you need something to remind you. Like you have a list, you go shopping. So when you're thinking about what you need, so you know you need X, Y, and Z. But now when you go there, your mind is focused on something else, and your attention is diverted. So therefore, when you take out your list and you read the list, that's the idea of making a list, that you need to recall it. It's like any, that seems to be obvious, the person that takes notes in a class. You understand it now, but 3 weeks from now, you've forgotten it. You can't reconstruct it, so now you have a permanent record. You got it. Yeah, so good.
That's all I wanted to say, that...
That's necessary for man. That we understand. That's self-explanatory.
Right. I'm saying the idea behind that, why somebody would forget, is that, like, he's engrossed in other things right now. It totally, you know, blinds...
There's nothing wrong with that. That's natural. That's the way man is. If he was only going to... If a person was going to focus his energy on one thing, so he shouldn't forget it, his mind would not be free to explore other things. But that's the difference, obviously. That's the nature, the limitations of man's intelligence, that he can only focus on a certain amount of things at a time. So what's going to cause him to go back to that which was which he was focusing on last week? Everything is a separate event. You know, his mind can't encompass everything at the same time. That's an impossibility. Go ahead.
Yeah, bad
approach. I'm sorry?
Bad approach.
I didn't know where you were going with it either. I'm not sure where you were going with it. Actually, if you're going to study the Kesha, okay. The whole thing is fascinating. Well, what's the idea of the rainbow altogether? What is the idea? Why is it a sign? What is this covenant that God is making with him? And if God's making a covenant with him, so what does it have to do with the rainbow? The connection between the rainbow and the covenant itself is interesting. Actually, if you read through the psukim, which was what I was doing during the little, pause, in general, it's not such a problem. It's just one word over there. Take a look at it. In general, it's just saying that God's establishing this as a sign between me and you. But that's not a problem, because it's essentially for Adam. You see that it's a necessary phenomenon for Adam, for man, for Noah, but of course all the descendants of Noah. So apparently, I think the Mefarshim say that God did not create the rainbow at this point. The rainbow is something that's a natural phenomenon. There's nothing unique or mystical about the rainbow. It always existed. But now it has a certain significance. Okay, so a person shouldn't think that this is the first appearance of the rainbow, that there's something new in the creation. a natural phenomenon which always existed, but it didn't have any special connection to the life of Adam. But now it has a special significance in light of what occurred. So that has to be interpreted. The idea that there needs to be an oath, that the brit requires an oath, okay, that's not, I don't think it's such a complicated idea, because that's part of the system that we have in Yadis. We have a Shabbos as an oath, Tefillin as an oath. It's a category of mitzvot. It's connected to mitzvot that serve the function of being an oath. So we can try and explain that. But that's what we're familiar with. And it doesn't seem to be that difficult an idea that we need a sign, we need an oath. I was just thinking, well, where's another case that's very challenging? That's a nice theme over here. It's a nice idea to study. I mean, Yosef brought up the case. Where's another case? You open your mind to it, you start to think about it. What would you say, I think, would be even more challenging? If you could ask this, you think like this. It's like in the Gemara in Sanhedrin that we're doing, the first Gemara. We're not doing it in Shir, but you're doing it in Bikias. You know, where the Gemara asks the question, contradicting the idea that, by Dinei Mamonis, you have to have Fisha Chakira. So the Gemara says, from Shtar, Ma'uchar, and so forth. Now, if the Shtar doesn't have the exact date, then we say it's Ma'uchar. Then the Gemara says, he had a better place to ask the question from. We were discussing that the other afternoon. And that is when you're raising an objection to something, it's interesting how the Gemara ties in over here. When you're raising an objection, you raise the most powerful objection. It's true that that's a good question, but there's another case which is even a stronger objection to the idea. Now, if you're going to raise this type of a question, it's true you're doing it because this is a Sedra. So you're asking it because it appears, this problem appears in the Sedra. But if you're dealing with the subject, that is to say, the appearance that God would need some kind of a reminder, I just thought of something which might be a stronger case.
Mr. Ryan?
Yeah, very good. Explain.
Remember the Menorah of us. He said,
I can't hear you. You gotta be. Please try to get closer to the mic. Or the telephone, whatever. What?
I'm practically screaming.
Oh, I'm sorry. Why?
I don't know.
Do you have the phone there?
Yeah. Okay, I'm closer now.
Now I can hear you.
Okay. When they were, they cried out to Hashem, and it says that he remembered them. Right, when they were suffering in Mitzrayim, because they suffered for hundreds of years. And then they cried out to him, and he remembered them. It was as if he did not hear their suffering for the first couple hundred years.
Yeah, but that wasn't what I was thinking about. That's okay, that's true. But you see you can explain. You can explain that. If I ask you the question, you can explain that.
Because their tzaka was different at that point.
Yeah, that means to say that now God found them worthy of relating to. It has to do...
because of a certain component of the tzaka.
Yeah, I mean, what I write, that God acknowledges their tzaka. That meant to say that they had achieved a certain state. That simply because they were being oppressed, that wasn't sufficient. But it meant that God would relate to them because they had achieved a certain level of Yedias Hashem, of recognition of God, so that made them worthy of God's intervention. That's really what it's saying.
So which case? I'm not sure then.
Anyone? But you're in the right area. You're in the right zone. Think about the night before the... And I will see the...
Yeah, but that's the same thing. That's the same thing.
I will see the Dom.
Yeah, that's the same thing. There was an idea that they were partaking
Excuse me. Here's the case. Once you have an answer, fine. It just seems to be the way the description is that, at least on the surface, that I'll see the blood and I'll skip over you. That's the question. That seems to be a more blatant case. That doesn't God know? If the idea is that if the condition of your being saved is that you have to partake of this mitzvah, okay, fine, so God knows everything. But then God is giving you a specific command to put the blood. That's like a sign. And I'll see the blood and I'll skip over it. So, at least on the surface, that seems to be the same type of problem. Why does God need that? At least on the surface. So when you read the psukim superficially, I'm sure it creates that impression. That God's telling you, So, oh, now I'm going to go sweep through the town, and I'm going to have to say that you're Skip. It's because the Jews are intertwined, intermingled with the Goyim, with the Mithraim, and this will help the air, so to speak. Of course, that's not the correct interpretation, but in terms of the description, that seems to be the... that seems to present the same type of problem. You have a similar... Well, you have a situation in Tanakh, which is similar, but it doesn't... It's not a problem because it doesn't relate to God. If you remember when
by Yeshua.
Yeah, exactly.
By Rachel.
Yeah, that's right. What did they tell her?
Put a flag out.
So yeah, Rachel was a dentist. She helped out the spies, and in return, because of her loyalty to the not to her people, but to the Jews, because she recognized the Kadosh Baruch Hu and the truth that this is really. It's an interesting thing. That's the case of someone that actually, even though it was her country. I'm sorry?
That's because they made a shvua, not the killer.
Yes, so they made a shvua, not the killer, but they told her you have to fulfill the condition and you got to put out you have to have a sign. Like the red, it was what, a red wheel or something, right?
Yeah.
To hang from the window.
Yeah.
That makes perfect sense because you're dealing with people and they have no way of knowing. They have to go by the senses, by physical evidence. That makes sense, but superficially it means that God is requesting the same thing. Obviously, that's not what it means. Okay, so you want to say yes, but it's not as challenging. So let's see if you can differentiate between that and the case that's being raised in terms of the Keshet.
Because by Mitzrayim with the Magos Bechoros. So when they agree to put the blood out, what they're saying is that they have an understanding of the true idea of God, and that merit is what allows them to be saved.
But don't they have the understanding? Don't they really know they have the understanding?
No, because putting out the blood is a demonstration of the fact, is a maisa which demonstrates that they are understanding of the true idea of God. So that action is what allows them to be saved. But by the Keshes, so when the rainbow comes out, man hasn't actually done anything. In other words, the rainbow is a natural phenomena of your refraction of light through water vapor. So since man hasn't actually done anything, you know, if man did something, you could say now God is seeing man, you know, do an action of Kiddush Hashem or Yedias Hashem, but the rainbow happens on its own. And also by Noah, saving Noah was part of the great design. So nothing changed. Like it doesn't say that anything changed about Noah when he was in the Teva when God remembered him. I mean, he didn't do anything to show an extra belief in God.
Yeah, I think you have the right idea. And the truth of the matter is that this is really confirmed by the Pasuk. That's what I had in mind.
That differentiates the cases, doesn't it?
Take a look at the Pasuk in Shia. I hope you have it. Take your Chumash. If you look at the way the Pasuk describes the Dam, you can prove it. It's very, very precise. That on the surface, superficially, a person, I mean, as children, you always have that idea. That God skips over and he sees the blood, and that's how he knows. But if you take a look at the Sukkim over there, the way it describes it, you'll see that's not the case. Go to Shemos, Yiddeis. Take a look at Yiddeis. Well, first look at the Pasuk and see if you can detect something unusual in the Pasuk. Then we'll go to Rashi, who explains it. I'm sorry? I can't hear you. That's in Shemos, Yiddeis. That's a strong statement. You know, you got to learn. You see, you can't learn Chumash superficially. But it seems to be a certain ambivalence in the pasuk. It says, "V'ha'ya adam lachem ra'ot," and the blood will be for you for a time. Ala batim asher atem sham. On the houses where you're in. So Raisi has that dumb, then it says, I will see the blood. Upatachti aleichem, and I'll skip over you. Lo yi abachem negev famashchus. And there will not be a plague to destroy you, ba'akosi be'eretz Yisrael. So it says, where is the blood? Let's ask ourselves that question, a simplistic question. Was the blood on the inside or the blood on the outside? Take a look at Rashi. Lo yi adam lacham lo'os, lachem lo'os, v'lo lachem lo'os. For you, but not for others. Because Mikne Adam, Shranasna Adam, Ella Livishnim. That they only place the blood within. Ah, so that's an interesting question. That really removes the idea that the blood is outside so that some external being could perceive it. That can't be the case. The blood is really inside. And if the blood is really inside, it's for you for nose, so what's the idea that I will see it?
Exactly.
Ever, ECS Adam. Hakol goyel lefanav. Everything is known to God. So you see, Chazal are aware of this thing, this problem, I'm taking it literally. Ela Homer HaKadosh Baruch Hu, noticing I need it, ain't I pay my ideas, direct my eyes, my attention, liros, to see she'atem asukim b'mitzvotai, that you're involved in my mitzvot, u'poseich ani aleichem. So I think this basically is what Yosef was meaning, that is to say, it's described, of course it's anthropomorphic, it's described that way, but it's to really convey the idea that it was necessary for the Jews themselves to understand clearly what the differentiation is. There's a differentiation going on, a separation going on. And a tremendous calamity is going to happen to the Mitzrayim, and a tremendous salvation is going to happen to you. Whenever that occurs, there's always danger. Because all these things can be interpreted in the wrong way. You can go to your head, and you can think that that proves that you're superior. And there's something inferior about them, or God loves you, whatever the case may be. All of this is a very dangerous phenomenon. So therefore, it was done in a very careful way to make it clear that this is the oath, this is the understanding that you're supposed to have, that the only differentiation between you and them is that you attach yourself to the mitzvot. It's not you. It's the system that I've given you which will perfect you. That's what it means that that's what I relate to. It doesn't mean that God sees it or anything. There's no need in terms of God for any kind of sign, but there's a need for you. And the idea that I see that means that that has validity in my eyes. And that's the only reason why I'm entering into the situation to differentiate. The upasachti, that's the differentiation. The only thing that differentiates you is the mitzvah. So it's very, very clear. It's beautiful. You have to go through the pasuk, and the pasuk really contains both ideas. Now, what about the case of the keshet? So I think the question, the difference was, that okay, this makes sense with regard to these cases. Wherever God is acting, wherever God is relating to us, and it's because of something, some merit that we have, because of some positive thing that we've done. So whenever it's depicted that way, that God heard us screaming, it's not. The idea is not that God was moved by the screaming, it's just pointing out that that's the factor that made us suitable in God's eyes. That's the idea that it's trying to convey. Okay, so it uses that method. It's as though, because that's the idea. It's as though in a human context, when you manifest a certain quality and somebody else relates to it, so then it's depicted that way. Because the other party has no way of knowing that it's there unless you manifest it. So that type of a description is used in terms of the Torah, but it's there. It's not that that God needed that. It's just for our sake. So we understand that that's the factor that is responsible for God relating to us, not because of any other reason, that we have some kind of a superiority or God likes us or anything like that. Now, what about the case of the keshet? Can we resolve it over here? But that seems to be different. It seems to be that there's a sign. Does the keshet fall into that category? Does it reflect anything? Or, I mean, the way it's being described, it's just a phenomenon in nature. So, if you go to the Pesukim, though, it's only one man, you know, because it basically just says that God's establishing it for a sign of the covenant, and it's necessary for man. That we can understand. We'll try and explain that. Why it's necessary for man, or what it is, how it serves the purpose. But there's just one word over there that sort of says that I will see it, or you see us. That's in Pasuk.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that, it doesn't mention that that God is going to see it. As it did by the Don, it says, I will see. I will see the blood. So then we have to explain it. Here it does, well, that word does come in, Uriseah. Yeah, Mahayisa Keshes Ba'anan, that's in Tezayim. Uisiyah Liskor, and I'll see it to remember the Bris Olam, the eternal covenant between God and living creatures. V'chol Bas Hashalas. So it does present a bit of a challenge. Okay, anyone?
Why can't we say it kind of works the opposite way in this case, that you have an oath which is created, or which exists right now, and since this is, I'm not exactly explaining the Zechira by God, but it's saying that since there is this idea of Zechira by God, this is really something which...
Is the idea of what by God?
Zechira. Zechira.
Zechira, okay, fine.
So really this is something which is for man, correct?
This is something for man, right.
So, the idea of this here over here seems to be that, Midas and Din would dictate that, that the world should be destroyed right now. But Midas and Rachman is that the world won't be destroyed.
Because of Noah?
No, not be, just, that's the bris. The bris is that the world at certain points in time should be destroyed, but Midas and Rachman says that it won't be destroyed. So God is not acting on Midas HaDin. And now this is something which is for man to recognize.
Well, that's a little complicated. I don't understand. But doesn't God act with Midas HaDin and Midas HaRachman?
No, Midas HaDin would say that the world should be destroyed.
Right.
So
then what do you do? So, but yeah, but God also can relate to us and Midas HaRachman. And Midas HaRachman says it shouldn't be destroyed. So what's the problem? So, what do you need a new covenant, so to speak, or a new sign?
No, so now the sign is just simply something for man now. It's not for God.
I'm not quite sure. I'm not sure what you're saying. What does it have to do with the rainbow? How does the rainbow fit into this idea?
The rainbow is simply only for man.
But what is it?
That man should recognize that...
What does the rainbow show? It means this thing is arbitrary.
I'm telling you, it's
arbitrary, it has no significance whatsoever. It's a pick a phenomenon, and when you see this phenomenon, you associate it with my problem. Or is there something more to that? In the case of the blood, the dam was an oath. There's another case of an oath. It wasn't just arbitrary.
Okay.
Because the dam reflects the asukim ritual. What's that?
Okay,
did I miss something?
So one shot that I've seen in the portion is that because the rainbow, it's like a bow which is pointing away from the people.
Yeah.
So that gives man the recognition that an idea of Midas HaRachman, that God is not going to destroy men.
Well, you see, this really, in order to explain the rainbow, you have to really, you have to get into a deeper insight into the whole issue of the model. It's very difficult to tackle the idea of the rainbow in isolation. If you understand what took place in terms of what the model was in fact, what the chait of that generation was, and also what the phenomenon of the model was, if you understand it on a deeper level, then you can understand, you can approach the idea of the rainbow, because it's much deeper than that. Therefore, I don't know if I could do that. Today, I could set up the issues, I could set up the problems, and then I could sort of give a shiur on the marble. It's a fascinating area. For example, some of you may have heard this before. I mean, I don't know how many. You'll let me know. If everybody's heard this, then I don't have to give over the whole shiur, and I could just refer to the connecting ideas. But let's go back a little bit. Maybe we'll just set it up. I'll set up some of the problems. And I'll give you an assignment. You can work on it. And then we'll get together and we'll try and resolve that. And once you have a clearer understanding of what's going on, then the idea of the rainbow will fit naturally. Now, you have to work your way back. What is the rainbow connected to? What is the rainbow is the effect. What's the cause, so to speak?
Rain.
The who?
Rain.
No, I don't mean that. I don't mean it that way. I understand that. I mean in terms of the idea of the rainbow, the covenant of the rainbow.
You want to have another model?
Yeah. So let's go back to that idea and ask ourselves the question, why? Why is that? Well, what's the reason for that? Let's take a look. Let's take a look. This is after the Achar HaMavol. This is in Perek Ches. When God tells him to descend, this is Achar HaMavol. See, nothing is so precious and simplistic. You can read the story like superficially. Like all the drama takes place at the beginning, God's going to destroy the world, and therefore there won't be anything, but Noach Matachain, there was one person that found favor, alright, then he's saved with the Teva, and the rest of the world is destroyed, and that's the end of the story. You see, it's not so precious, because even after, and that would help us to explain, by Yisko, even after the Teva, it's not that simple at any point. When he reads, same in a Teva, he gets the command of God to remove himself from the Teva, with his family. I always wondered, and maybe it's a simple, simplistic question, but why is it work out that way? Why at this point was it necessary for God to tell him to leave the Teva? Isn't that something he could have discovered on his own? I mean, you see that when he was on the Teva, as the waters began to diminish, he tried to find out through his own devices, by sending out the birds, to see whether the land was dry. It seems at this point on, he could use his own judgment. When it's clear that it's safe to get off the Teva, so then he could do so. Yet here, it's only because of the Tzivui Hashem. That question, you know, I think is valid. I guess you could say that maybe there was too many unknowns over here, but given this whole cataclysmic event, it's, you know, he needs reassurance from God. Because who knows whether it's the right time. That's possible, but I'm not sure. And then he leaves. Then they eat Noach. Noach leaves. And all the animals. Then, it's interesting, the very first thing that he does, look at the sequence of events. Talk to him, you know, what would you have done first? But the most significant event, as the Torah described, is that he built him his Beach, Lashem. And he took from all of the pure animals and the birds, and he offered olos. That's interesting because there's no context over here. Like, what was the reason for this? What motivated him to do it? He just did it. But then here's a very anthropomorphic one, Chavala, where it says that God smelled the pleasant aroma. Oh. And God said to himself, I will not ever again curse the earth because of Adam. Kiyeta leva Adam ram and ura. For the inclination of the heart of man is evil from youth. Lo osifo lahakos as kolchai tasher atiti. Out kod yimei ha'aretz zera v'katzir v'kor v'chom v'kayis v'chor v'yom v'lai lo yishbosu. What is the difficulty with that? These two psukim. What's the difficulty? Let's forget about the fact that God smelled the description. It just means, say, Hensel idea is that it found favor. That's conveying the idea that it found favor in the eyes of God. And it would seem that there's a cause and effect. That because of this, God determined never again to destroy the world with a flood. Or never again to destroy the world. I don't think it's limited just to a flood. But that through other means God would. I don't think that makes sense. Yeah? So what is difficult about this?
Why did God
create? It says, I won't destroy. There's a tremendous question that you should ask.
Why didn't it prevent God originally?
Yeah, what's happening over here? Again, the simple thing's explanation, the simplistic explanation would be that somehow or other God was fooled that he's not going to do this again. He did it, he won't do it. Why not? Yeah, well, you have to ask yourself, why did God do it originally? Or, better than that, when God did it originally, was that it was that the correct thing to do? And Kera Muna, the Einamel, Sadik V'Yashahu. That everything that God does is correct, it's perfect, it's the right thing. And therefore, it's the right thing when man distorts, when he corrupts himself, and that's what God said in establishing the basis for the punishment, that the Tzelem Elokim will not be effective. Man is not living the correct life. He's living like a buffer. He's living like any other animal. So if that's the case, he has no basis for existence. That is to say that everything that God created for a purpose. And every being that God created fulfills its purpose. That's what it means. Ayala can tell us that God saw that it was good. It means it was in line with its purpose. But by Adam, it didn't say that, as you know. Because by Adam, whether or not he'll fulfill his purpose depends upon his bechira. So he was given the power to distort his purpose. However, if Adam should distort his purpose to the extent that there is no Adam anymore, there's no being in the creation, since everything else, all the animals and all the seas and everything in this particular sphere of existence was created only for the sake of Adam, and Adam by definition is a being that lives in accordance with his purpose, the Tzelem Elokim. So if the corruption is such that it doesn't manifest itself anymore, that there is no being that's flesh, that's instinctual and still rises above it and lives in accordance with his purpose, and then it has to be removed. There's no purpose, it doesn't exist. The God doesn't create for naught. So that's the idea of the marble. That makes perfect sense. And that's perfect justice. So now, what's the promise? Why is God saying he won't do it again? Now, there's only two possibilities. If you're going to say that now God made a change, that Adam doesn't have this capacity anymore, he's lost his bechira, and now he's going to be good no matter what. So, okay, that makes sense, but where do you see that? That's not the case. Obviously, after that time, God gave the Torah, b'charta b'chayim, and man wasn't changed in terms of bechira. And certainly, you see the history of mankind, it's not too many pages later, you read about the Tower of Babel, the Dar of Lada. So God had to come down and make another correction. So that's very, very significant. What's the idea? The simple implication here is that there's some kind of regret that I did it. That's the way most people would read it. Some kind of a sympathy, whatever the case is. But that doesn't make sense, because either it's absolute justice, this is correct. So then if mankind should reach the same state again, so then that should be the punishment. That can't change. Also, I just want to point out another thing to you. Take a look at the word, the reason God gives. He ate the way for Adam, Ra, min Ura. That's the reason. Whatever that means. Whatever that means, that is some kind of an exonerating factor. That he ate the way, since he ate the way for Adam, Ra, min Ura, so I won't destroy him because of that factor. So what's the obvious question that you must ask at this point?
What changed, Oliver?
Wasn't that the case in the first instance? You mean now it's the Yetzer Lev Adam Ram and Urav? But before, no. It wasn't the case. Wasn't that the case in the generation of Noah, of the flood? That was, it was also Yetzer Lev Adam, it would seem, that it was Yetzer Lev Adam Ram and Urav. And so what? That didn't help them.
It was worse. It was Rav Urav Koliyam.
Right, take a look. Take a look at the Pesukim. I think you have to go back to the end of Bereshit for this. Here it is. This is in the end of Bereshit. There is Vav Pasukei. Vayar Hashem, Ki Rabba Ro'as Adam Bohoret, that the evil of Adam had increased in the land. The Chol Yetzer Machshavos Libo, right, and the Yetzer, the inclination of the thoughts of his heart, Rak Rak Kolayom, was only evil all the day. So again, the Yetzer Machshavos Libo was Rak Rak Kolayom, and therefore, by Yinachem Hashem, God regretted, so to speak, Ki Yasas Adam, for it, by Yinachem Hashem Libo. There's a lot of anthropomorphic expressions. Person has to be very careful over here. God was very sad, so to speak. The only case where you have those kinds of expressions, I think. And then God said, "Vayomer Hashem em ches Adam, Hashem barasim apne Adam, v'yodem adayim v'advem esadam v'shman, ki nichanti ki asisim." That's the exact opposite of what he's saying now. Now he's saying, I won't destroy them. Why? Ki yetzalev Adam ra min Urav. But we ask, wasn't that the case in the first instance when God decreed punishment? If you look at the Pesukim, you see that the Pesuk there, that the reason that's being given to justify the destruction seems to be very similar. The Yetzer Hara is worse, the Yetzer Hara is wrong. So if that's the case, I mean, it's just a more powerful expression of that idea, and because of that, I'm going to destroy him. So it's a total contradiction that needs to be resolved. Hey. Oh. Yeah, this question is really very, very central in terms of understanding. You have to really, the challenge is to really differentiate between the two psukim. On the surface, they sound familiar. But the first psukim of Yeter Machshavah Rak Ra Kol Hayom is totally different than the other idea of Yeter Lev Adam Ra Min Ura. And this would indicate that the model was something more than what we simplistically imagine to be. It wasn't just a case that all the wicked people were killed, and Noach was saved, and now we'll start again. That doesn't seem to be possible to say that in light of what's going on over here. It's something more than that. I don't want to just give an answer, quick answer. I think I'd rather develop it more, systematically. So what do you say you guys work on this? Understanding of what's going on over here. I don't think it's possible to really appreciate the idea of the rainbow. See, because you can't just do the rainbow. You got to do this whole covenant. What's this covenant about? Well, what do you need the covenant for? And what's the relationship between the covenant and the fact that he brings the korban? All these things are significant. They're connected to each other. He comes off and brings a korban. As a result of the korban, the God makes this decision. And the reason that's given is not because he brought a korban, which would be difficult to understand. So why did he bring a korban? But it's because Yitzchak Adam Ramin Urav. Well, that's okay. So that didn't serve him in the first instance. So all these things become very difficult. Not to mention the big question. The big question is, aside from all these things, is we assume that God operates with perfect justice. And therefore we have to assume that it was correct to destroy the world, because that was the corruption was such that that's what was warranted. So now afterwards, what is God saying? Is God saying that will never happen again? Doesn't seem to be saying that. It's not a prediction that it will never happen again. So then the question is, well, what do you mean you won't destroy the world again if the world should achieve that degree of corruption? This is what's appropriate. This is the appropriate punishment, so why won't God do it again? If God acts in accordance with perfect justice, then that's what has to be done. That's what's necessary. And in terms of the idea of compassion, Michael mentioned Midas HaRachamim, if God operates with Midas HaDin and Midas HaRachman, which seems to be the case, so why didn't that prevail to save the world in the first instance? You have to assume that it did. That you see, even there was Midas HaRachman. You see Midas HaRachman. Where is Midas HaRachman? It seems to be, unless you want to say it's then, that God says, V'hoi Yamav, Me'e V'yes M'shana. He gives him 120 years, and he instructs Noah to build the Teva. So therefore, in spite of all their sins, the building of the Teva, so people would be curious and they'd ask questions and he could be Mochiach them. So they have 120 years that God is giving them because God is Erech HaPayim. Erech HaPayim seems to be part of Midas HaRachman. So it seems that everything that was done the first time was done because it was perfect justice and it included Midas HaRachman, obviously, because that's the way Adam is and he can't only exist in terms of Midas HaDin. So you see that's Hashem Elokim. That God relates to man in terms of Midas HaRachman, and in spite of that, doesn't mean he's always going to be saved. So then, it's difficult to say that was Midas HaDin and this is Midas HaRachman. Why? So these are the problems. Okay, I think that's your assignment, and next time we'll go into an exposition of the ideas of the flood, of the model. Deeper ideas. And it's very important. It doesn't take to just take a simple, one point here, one point here. But if you have a systematic understanding, then, these problems will be resolved. All right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, have a good day. The idea, these are, whatever I say is me based upon ideas that I think worked out a long time ago. I have no problem with that. I'm telling you. It's like a shiur. It's going to be more like a lecture.
That's great.
Okay, fine. I just want you to, yeah. All right, so then if you want to do that, I'd... You know, the only concern I have with these types of things is that maybe some guys have heard it before. But if the guys have not, then I have no problem. It's a nice, it's a very nice.
Nope.
No. To be like, you know,
good
review. I said Okie does little thing like yum. That's what Rocky says. It should be like the day he received it. Okay, let me just get back into the swing over here. I left you with a series of questions. Correct?
Correct.
I said you really can't approach the idea of the rainbow directly. And I think in general, it's interesting. Most people focus on the story of the flood and the developments prior to the flood, and then, you know, the phenomenon of the flood itself. But I think that people don't pay so much attention to what happens after the flood, Acharei HaMavol. But Acharei HaMavol is very, very significant. And I'm just going to review, maybe I, you know, said some of these things last, but I just want to get back into the swing, that if you look at what takes place after the flood, it really raises a lot of questions. The first thing Noah does, yeah, when he gets off of the Teva, he builds his Mizbeach, and he brings a carbon. And then it says that God, you know, so to speak, you know, smelled the pleasant aroma. And then God said that he won't curse the earth anymore, that he won't destroy the earth because of Adam anymore. And, you know, for the duration of the existence of the world, you know, all the seasons will remain, that the world as God created it will not be subject to destruction. And then it says because seems to be the reason for this is because the Yetzer Leva Adam is Raman Urav, that the inclination of his heart is evil from youth. So all this is extremely difficult because, as you said, what we assume that when God destroyed the world, it was done on the basis of absolute truth, absolute justice. This is correct. That is to say, and it's something we can understand, that the God created for a purpose. And but Adam has Bechira. So he can thwart the purpose. So if he's not in line with the purpose to such an extent that he changes his nature, then he should be destroyed. So why is God changing now? Why is God saying that he won't do it again? And also the reason that was given, that the inclination is evil from youth, well, what does that have to do with it? Well, why would that be the reason not to destroy him? And wasn't that true before he was destroyed? And so on and so forth. And then, as we mentioned, you take a look at the psukim before the flood, and it's very similar. It says that that God saw that the thoughts of his heart, the inclination of the thoughts of his heart, was rak kolayom, even worse. So if we're going to say that the phenomenon of the inclination being evil is the reason why he shouldn't be destroyed, so then he shouldn't been destroyed in the first place, because it was even worse than it would seem, or pretty much the same thing. It was rak kolayom, that's the inclination of his heart. So that determined that he should be destroyed. Good point. That's a point. The major questions, though, these are really major questions. I just don't want to say.
Cool.
Flood. I think it's important to take note of them. It's not just the promise. God establishes a whole new covenant. A treaty, so to speak, a covenant, a bris, with Noah. Yeah, after God says that, so then it says that God blesses Noah and tells him to revu. We take a look at Eric Tess. What's that noise, Tess? Huh?
What?
There's a noise, there's a banging.
Tess.
If you take a look at Eric Tess, there's many things that we should question. Because there's a new blessing. God blesses them and says, Puravu. That seems to be redundant because that's the blessing that was given to Adam HaRishon.
doesn't seem that it needs to be renewed in every generation. Then there's something strange in Pasuk Beis. This is Tes Beis. Umorachem v'chitchem yia. The fear of you will be on all the beasts of the earth and all the birds of the heaven and so forth. All the swarming things, all the fish, the yedchem nitanu. Now that's a completely new idea that God is telling him that he's placing. It's not revealing a reality that this is the phenomenon, that this is the situation. It's one thing to say that a person doesn't know, he's going into a forest. He doesn't know if the animals have a fear of man or not. It's one thing to tell him a fact. Here it will be. It means to say that God is doing something to place the fear of man on the animals. So this is, one has to ask, is this the way it was in terms of creation, that God created the animals that way? And we do see that that's a known thing, that generally speaking, animals stay away from man, they have a fear of man. Unless that's broken, you know, you can break it. Like, for example, feeding bears is not a good idea, because as a result of that, they A, become dependent upon it, and B, they lose their fear. But other than that, in a natural state, they stay away. People go mountain climbing and so on and so forth. As long as the situation is not disturbed, the animals, generally speaking, stay away from man. This seems to trace back to here. But the question has to be raised, why is this something that came into being now, or is this the way it was from the very beginning? It's very, very strange. That's another important thing, that it's a study in its own right. Is this the way God created the world, so then why is it happening now? Apparently it wasn't. So if it wasn't, then why wasn't it that way for all the generations before? It seems to be a necessary thing. Okay? Then you have the permission is given to eat meat. It's another significant development. Because other Marisa did not have. T.R. Gay says, Masati Lachamas Kol, that God only gave him permission to eat fruits and vegetables. But he wasn't given permission to eat meat. Now he's being given permission to eat meat. You have to account for that. What's the reason? And then, of course, it's for the warnings that once on that subject, so then it's already involved with destroying something. Apparently that's a significant thing. Because if you can eat meat, it means you can destroy a living being, an animal. So then Avim and Achai comes into existence, but then God reiterates the warnings not to kill people. Shoteh Sama Adam. Alright? So these things have to be explained as well. It seems that there's a new situation over here. There's a new situation. And we have to explain that, and that's why all these new points come into being, and they have to be related. They're all connected to something that happened as a result of the marvel. Okay? Before I go on, any comments, any points? I don't need further questions, we have a lot of questions. Okay. So the question arises, we understand, if you take a look at the Torah goes to great lengths. I mean, when it goes to great lengths, it's, you know, in terms of the amount of tzukim, it's not that much, but given the way the Torah describes things, it really depicts different phases in the development of the chet. This goes back to the end of Bereishis, if you want to go back to Perek Vav. To the end of Bereishis, before Parshas Noach, it gives you you know, the history of the development over here. That's in Perek Vav, Vayihi Heichel HaAdam LaRov Al Pnei HaAdama. And people began to increase, population increased. That's a factor that contributed to this corruption. Uvanos Yildu Lahem, and they gave birth to women, to daughters. Very cryptic, but essentially there was a change in terms of the... It would seem to me, this is my observation, I was just doing this recently, is Masoret, that as long as mankind was... I have to say that because I said at the beginning that I'm basically basing myself on the ideas of Rabbi Seder Lichtenberg, but I have to be careful because some of the things are my own, and I don't want to attribute this to anybody else. That's the difficulty in these kinds of things. But here, it seems to me that the very increase in population was a factor contributing towards the corruption of mankind. I'm not going to go into it at great length now. I'm just going to mention that if you want to take it up later, discuss it with me, that's fine. Because I don't want to make a big issue out of this. It's not central. It's my observation that as long as mankind was small, so then that held people in check. I think it's a reality that you can see in many situations. Like a lot of people go outside of New York, you go to a small community, and there's a different sense that in a small community, everybody has a certain connection to everybody else. And being that everybody is small, there's a certain weakness, a certain interdependency, so then you tend to have less crime, and you tend to have people showing more concern for others, and so on and so forth. But once it gets very, very big, there's a certain impersonalization. Then, you know, the value of each individual decreases, and then you have all these phenomena of crime and, you know, a lack of concern for the other guy that we all associate with big cities. People that live out of town come to New York, you can see a complete difference when you're driving and people have no patience. It's just a loss of identification with the other individual. All right, so that's part of what's going on over here. That once they began, when they were small, because it says when they began to increase, when they were small, so it was a different situation. That the people obviously held their instincts in check, their aggressiveness was held in check. Not because they were perfected. See, people make a mistake also. It's like, I remember years ago, like in the early days of Israel, people would go to Israel and they'd marvel, you know, how it's different there, you know, you could walk anywhere you want, it's 3 in the morning, and they'll leave the doors open, and everybody cares about everybody, and, you know, how different it is in the United States. But, you know, even then, I mentioned that, is that because they're really inherently different, or that's simply because of the situation, the circumstance? If you have the same situation in America, in certain places, you know, the same phenomenon. But let's see, when they really develop, they industrialize, and they increase, and the truth of the matter is that that situation doesn't really exist anymore. I don't mean only because of the Arabs. Even aside from that, it's not a result of an inherent perfection. It's a circumstantial phenomenon. So then they began to increase, and all of a sudden they took notice of women. So women... Once women began to increase, and, you know, obviously when you increase, you have different kinds of women and different looks and all of that, so they began to look at women in a different way. In my opinion, it's sort of like something you have in the society today, and that is to say that the women today basically are regarded as sex objects. Take a look at the whole society and the advertising, the culture.
Ravi?
Yes.
Is there something wrong with the phone? We can't really hear you that well.
You can't hear me?
Now we can.
Now we can.
Because I have the small microphone. I got to talk right into it.
Okay.
But you've heard me?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Okay. I just don't want to have to repeat everything.
No, I've heard you. It kept going down.
I'm sorry?
It kept going lower.
Because I'm using this earpiece that I use for the cellular. All right. Maybe I'll get a better one. But, do you hear my point? So essentially, these are the two factors. That this type of a phenomenon, this aggressiveness, this lack of identification or lack of regard, was influenced by the growth in population and also by the increase in the amount of women. Because that's a key factor over here. And then the next pasuk is crucial. It says that this is an amazing pasuk. It says the B'nai Elohim saw the B'nos HaAdam, Tovo Tena, that they were goodly. And they took women, Mikol HaShevacharu. Now this pasuk is a study, it's a shiur in its own right. I defy anyone to explain what's going on. Who are the B'nai HaElokim? And who are the B'nos HaAdam? You get the sense that there are different types of beings, that there are beings from different planets over here. But that's not the case. Actually, the truth of the matter is that this is a separate shiur in its own right, to try and decipher this. But I suggest, I'm not going to get into that now. I'm just going to, in a very general way, you have to go to the Mefarshim, because then it talks about the Nephilim. So it's very challenging, this parsha is very, very challenging, simply to try and figure out what the pshat is. And who are these different groups of people? Sounds strange, like, you know, supernatural beings, B'nei HaElokim, sons of God, what does that mean? However, I suggest you go through at least the Ramban. The Ramban really deciphers it. To make a long story short, because the point is crucial to the whole understanding of what takes place, without going into all the particulars, and it's very difficult to figure out the psukkim. But the Ramban says that the B'nei Elohim are really a reference to essentially Adam and Chava, and to the early generations that came after them. Why are they called B'nei Elohim? Anyone?
Because they were the most perfect.
I'm sorry?
Because they were the most perfect.
They were the most perfect. Yeah, because they were the most perfect, well, why would they be called B'nei Elohim?
Directly from God.
Yeah, because they did not come into being through the ordinary process of, you know, birth. They weren't born. To people. They were direct handiwork of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which means that they were in the most perfected state. That's very important, in the most pristine, perfected state. In order to understand the story, we have a certain difficulty over here, and that is we're dealing with a type of individual that we are not familiar with. We're dealing with a type of human being that's completely different than we are, not in terms of the essentials, the components, that is to say that man has never changed. The essence of man is really the physical and sensual, and he possesses a divine element, the capacity to understand abstract truths and to utilize them in order to conquer his yetzer. That's the essence of Adam. However, the particularities, and essentially with regard to the physical dimension, the physical dimensions of a person, and the physical strength of a person, and the relationship of Adam to all the other creatures from a purely physical standpoint is completely different in the pre-diluvian stage, to use fancy terms. That means the pre-marvel. That's crucial. And you can see that the psukim are indicating that idea. B'nei Elohim is telling you that these Adam and Chava first, but then the Ramban explains succeeding generations were of a tremendous physical stature. They were of a tremendous physical dimension in terms of their size. We don't know the exact size, in terms of their power. But I think what's the most significant fact that establishes that we're dealing with people that are on a completely different physical framework? What's the most significant fact?
Their age?
The age factor. See, that's something that people tend to deny. They can't deal with that. Modern man can't deal with that. And a lot of people that aren't committed to a true belief in Torah, that Torah is absolute truth, they tend to dismiss that. The fact is that these people lived almost 1,000 years. That's something that it's a real affront to modern man, to his narcissism. Because every generation assumes that it's superior to everyone that preceded it. Especially modern man, because we look back at others, it's not just the mere fact that we're alive and they're not, that they died, so therefore they're inferior. That's a psychological phenomenon, as absurd as it is. That's how people look at things. But we're also the beneficiaries of this tremendous technology, so we feel totally superior. Look at past generations, they'd have to travel by horse and buggy, they didn't have any telephone or television. So you automatically assume that they're inferior. However, when we encounter this, because everybody still, no matter how superior we are, people still can't solve the problem of death. And even with all modern medicine, so you can extend the lifespan, 80 years, 85, you read about people who live almost 1,000 years, and you can't accept that. But nevertheless, that's the truth. This shows that you're dealing with a being that was from a physical standpoint of a completely different dimension. The psukim are indicating that. And the psukim are indicating that in relation to something that occurred. What occurred? A tremendous corruption occurred because their energies became attached to the pursuit of these women. There were two Averos over here. Two Averos in terms of the generation. The outbreak began with the increase in desire, in lust. They became attracted to women. It's a new phenomenon, like a sexual revolution, so to speak. That's one type of a thing. But this led to the other phenomenon of chamas, where there was a complete breakdown not only in terms of the boundaries, the controls over the sexual, but also in terms of the respecting of the rights of other people. That's what the Ramban says, that they took. They took women means they took by force. They took without concern. So it's an important expression, vayikru. They took, but the Kodesh HaBachel is even worse, because that means that they just totally disregarded other people. That means they would take married women and so on and so forth. That is, so that's the other aspect. You see over here the development of two significant corruptions. One is simply with regard to the fact that man is living like a behemoth, that his whole objective is to pursue the sexual pleasure. And the second one is that it carries over into the other area. It's one thing, because Ramban says later on that Lonechtumu Gzardinam Elam Achamas. You go to Noah when God already mentions the final decree that there were two things. That God thought that the world was Nishchasa, Ki Yishas Kolbasa was Darko, that all people perverted their way. Means to say that they were living essentially an animalistic existence. And that the world was, but the decree was, God said, I'm going to destroy the world, because the world is filled with chamas. The chamas represents the interpersonal violence, the complete breakdown. Let me just explain what the Ramban says. The reason for that is, he says, well, next to Gzardinam Elam HaChamas, that the reason why that is decisive is because that is something which is rational. You don't need a prophet to reveal that. Meaning to say, basically, that it's true that a person is supposed to control his instinct. He's not supposed to live an instinctual life. But even when people deviate, as long as they retain a certain type of rationality in their existence in terms of maintaining a society. So a person realizes that he can't take somebody else's. He's going to take whatever he wants of the other person is going to do the same thing. Then there's going to be a complete breakdown in the maintenance of any kind of society, any kind of civilization. So as long as he's able to restrict himself in that area, so he's still functioning as a rational being. But once it carries over into that area, and everybody's cheating from everybody else, and everybody's destroying everybody else, so there's a complete breakdown in terms of the rational faculty altogether. That's the ultimate destruction of Adam, that he can't function anymore. Even in these areas of self-preservation, he can't function in a rational way. So that's basically the corruption. Of course, the question arises, what were the causes? What were the causes of the corruption? And once you establish that, what was the real objective of the model? What was the true objective of the model? Okay, so again, I'm not going through all these psukim now, but if you go through them on your own, you'll see a hint. It talks about the B'nai Elohim, and then there's the B'nai Sa'adam. Then again, in Dalit, Hanafilim Hayabar, Bayamahim, the Nephilim. And again, all these terms are difficult. Different interpretations. But that's a race, it's referring to a race of giants. They're called Nephilim, the Ramban explains, because there was a deterioration. Man experienced, the way the Ramban explains it, that once people, as long as people acted correctly, up until the generation basically of Enosh, that they weren't involved in idolatry, so it says that they, by Yoled, that they gave birth to children in their own image. And you say in their own image that they retained that high degree of perfection, of physical perfection, just like their parents. So they too are the B'nai HaElokim. But when the B'nai HaElokim began to deviate and to become involved in the sexual, and also when they began to become corrupted in terms of idolatry, but that's the Rambam explains, as far as Enosh is concerned, you know, that they began to introduce different forms of worship, the worshiping of the stars and so forth. There's a whole deterioration over there. That affected them in a physical way, and they began to diminish. So they began to, another generation of Nephilim, which was inferior, it was inferior to the original generation, but it was still a race of giants. Then it says, V'gam Achreichein, and they began to reproduce themselves. He said, "Asher yavo b'nei ha'olkim al b'nos ha'adam v'yodu l'anhem ha'giborim." These people were the giborim. Asher me'olam anti Hashem. They were people of tremendous renown. Again, what you have over here is that this type of a corruption that took place and spread throughout the entire world was essentially initiated by a group of people that were of gigantic proportions. Diborim, extremely powerful people. So what does one thing have to do with the other? What was the underlying cause of this tremendous corruption that spread throughout the entire world? And then it's just, you know, if you go to the Pesukim, then God thought he rabba ra'asa Adam. The increase. So the first phase is the outbreak of the disease, so to speak. This type of a behavior becomes established. But then the question is, remain restricted. Like in our society today, there's a lot of corruption, but sometimes it's just restricted. It doesn't spread throughout the entire society. What's happening over here is that it's not restricted. You have the increase, the expansion. It begins to spread throughout the entire society. That's one thing. And the chol yetzemach shvav libo, rak rak kol hayom. That's another thing, is that you have a lot of perversion in this society, especially now with the internet and so forth. But it's rak rak kol hayom. And a lot of these people, it's a recreation, it's a diversion. But it's not all day long, because they have to all day long. They've got to work, they have to be productive, whatever it is. But then, in their spare time, this is what they derive their pleasure from. It's not rak rak kol hayom. But rak rak kol hayom means that this becomes the essence, that they're completely involved in this throughout the entire day. This just consumes their entire personality. That's another development. And of course, you can see, when God said in Pasuk Gimel that la yado ruchi ba'adam ba'olam, that if this type of phenomenon continues, that my spirit, which is a reference to that Tzelem Elokim in Adam, that Adam is a unique, fragile type of a being, that he's essentially is an instinctual, a physical being, but he has the Tzelem Elokim, and the Tzelem Elokim is supposed to rule over the other part. And however, as a result of these behaviors and the involvement in lust, so then that's going to destroy the Tzelem Elokim. It'll just be like a behemoth. It won't manifest itself. And that's what it says, Vahayama. That it'll only have 120 years. Maybe as Mashiach, I'll have 120 years. Means that guys, it's a mistake people make. They think that that's the lifespan of man. It's not. It means that God is giving mankind 120 years to do tshuva. But God doesn't punish them until the sin reaches its complete dimension. So they have a chance to do tshuva. They have free will. Then the second phase is Vayinachem Hashem, so to speak. Everything is so to speak. Kiyasas Adam, Vayisasev Elibo, Emches Adam. Then God says he's going to obliterate Adam. And the final phase is in Parshas Noach. And then it mentions the fact that Noach came into being, and then he was a tzaddik, then Masachim. And then, that's the final phase. The final phase is that it becomes institutionalized, it becomes locked in, every facet of society is corrupted, and there's no possibility of change at this point. And then, it says that God saw that the world was nishchasa, and ish was called basar. Okay, that was the cause. It's interesting. Take a look at Yudbeis. In Perek Vav, Pasuk Yudbeis. You have the two factors. It says that God saw that it was all shasa, kishas of basa. But then in the, when he speaks to Noah, kate kol basa, he kate kol basa, that's it, the end. It's interesting because in the previous pasuk it says God saw the hashchasa, the corruption, the sexual corruption. But in the indictment it's the chamas. Because it seems that those two things are related. The underlying cause was the sexual. Interesting point is that you see that in our society, people always differentiate between the two. And they say that one thing has nothing to do with the other. That we can be moral, we can be ethical, we can be humanitarian, but that doesn't mean that we have to control ourselves. In the sexual area, that's totally different, and there's no right and wrong in that area, and whatever you enjoy, you're fine, as long as you don't hurt anybody. See, but God just maintains that once you give in to that, once you break down the barriers in the sexual area, then it crosses over the boundary lines and it affects you in all the areas. You can see that now, sorry, today. All the economic corruptions and the theft and the cheating and so forth. Okay. So now, I think we have a better understanding as to what the cause was. What the cause of the chag was. And Chazal say, and again, it doesn't mean, I don't know if it's taken literally, I don't have the Chazal in front of me, but they explain, I'm just paraphrasing roughly, that Adam only sinned because of the good that God had done for him. That God had done something very good for him, and he rebelled because of it. And that is to say that before the marvel, a person would plant once in 40 years, and the earth would give forth all the fruits and so forth. Indicates a number of factors, that the climactic conditions were such that the type of fruit and vegetables that was produced by the world in that time was a totally different dimension. And Adam himself would traverse the world, go across the entire world in a very short period of time, and he'd uproot mighty oak trees, cedar trees, with his bare hands, and leopards and whatever, with a tar, and he would be able to destroy them with his bare hands. That type of thing. Now, again, I don't know what exactly is literal, but it's conveying something. Meaning, so what's it conveying over here? What's the idea? Let's pause for a second. And they're connecting this type of an idea, that Adam was this giant, was this powerful being, and all the animals were like nothing to him. And the fact is that he could, again, he had tremendous sustenance from the fruits, the vegetables, all a result of the climactic conditions. And because of this, he sinned. What does that mean? Why would he sin? Means to say that, you know, everybody has a, an ego. When people feel tremendously secure within themselves, and tremendously powerful, so then they turn away from God. That emotion of man being a supreme being, not needing God, that comes out. Whenever a person, that's a reality even today. I mean, when a person feels powerful and strong and secure, so he's less dependent upon God. When a person gets ill and he's weak, that's what the Torah always warns to do, even when they go into Eretz Yisrael. That when you become secure and all of that, you'll turn away from God. When a person, of course, is experiencing difficulties and dangers and he's weak, then he turns to God. So, if man could achieve a state where he felt so powerful and so comfortable within himself, that there was never a moment when he felt that weakness, that he acknowledged the existence of any other being outside of himself that he really was dependent upon. Once he achieved that state of supremacy, so then there's nothing that can stop him. Then he's a conqueror, yes, and then whatever he wants, he's a... You see people like that. When a person feels that he's the center of the world and he's so powerful, it breaks down any barrier. That essentially is what the Chazal are saying. That the chait resulted from that God created man in a perfected type of a physical condition that was all for his benefit. He'd live for hundreds and hundreds of years, and he reigned supreme over the entire creation. As a result of this, he had tremendous, tremendous energy. If he would have utilized it for the correct purpose, so then he would be able to achieve tremendous spiritual perfection. But if he misuses it, and if he allows it to go to his head, and to believe that he himself is superior and supreme because he has these qualities, he looks at the rest of the world and sees how powerful he is, and he feels that this is because of him, so then he becomes the most corrupt being. That was the challenge that people had in those days. That's why it refers to these gigantic beings and so forth. That they're clearly a significant element in the corruption. So that reached the point of such hate that God said that this is not Adam anymore; it has to be destroyed. But now you have to understand what exactly is the marvel. And there are two ways that you can understand the marvel. Two ways. One way is to simply say, and I think that most people look at the marvel this way, simplistic kind of a way, that everybody was corrupt, Noach was a tzaddik, so God wanted to destroy the corrupt, save Noach, so that's all. So God wrote a marvel to destroy the corrupt, And Noach was, was saved, and that's it. That's the simplistic way of learning it. But is there another way to learn the Bible? Anyone? Anyone hear me?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I'm trying to go right into the piece here. Is that how you learn the Bible?
What specifically are you focusing on is saying, like, there's two approaches? I mean,
there's two ways. But if it's not clear, you got to tell me. I thought it's clear.
Maybe I just think it's a little general. I'm just not sure.
It is very general. But it's completely different. That is to say, that let's say people become corrupt. I guess, like, maybe stolen a motor, so they're corrupt. So, but let's say there is 10 people that are not. So God comes in, destroys the corrupt, and the 10 remain. But that's it. There's no change, no other change besides that. Is that the idea of the model, that God just executes the guilty and now this will be the worst? Same situation as before.
No.
Same situation as before, except we've gotten rid of the bad guys.
No, because afterward there's changes in...
If you're going to maintain that, so then all the psukim afterwards are going to be very, very difficult to understand. So what's the alternative way?
It's a different world.
By the way, you see also that you go into the psukim, if it's just a question of destroying the wicked, so that could have been accomplished in a relatively short period of time. Even if it's through water, I mean, how long do you get? One day. One day you bring down the water and everybody drowns. That's the end of that. But you see, it goes on for a long period of time. It keeps describing the waters get higher and higher. And Chazal mentioned that there were all kinds of things going on, fires and water and explosions and all kinds of cataclysmic events are going on. I'm not going to do all the system. You see, even afterwards, when the waters diminish, the waters diminish, and he sends out the birds and that, but nevertheless, he didn't get off the cave until God instructs him. I mean, people ask that question too. Why didn't he just get off? But you see, you're right. If it's simply a matter of destruction, but no change, so then that question would be stronger. But if it's more than that, it's not just the destruction, but it's a cataclysmic event. Things that are going on which are going to make a very, very significant change in the physical factors, climactic changes, and so on and so forth, so that a new world is going to emerge, a new world. And things are going to be very radically different than they were before. Then that makes all these things make sense. About a whole year takes place till it gets off the table. And all the different things that are going on, that Chazal alludes to. Therefore, the Ramban says that there were two things going on. There was destruction, and then there was recreation. And therefore, because this was an adjustment, so to speak. Midas HaDin was that, in terms of the absolute, this is the way Adam was supposed to be. This was the ideal. You have a number of these things going on in Bereshit, just like Adam's nature was changed as a result of the first case, and he was given a whole new component, the component of conscience, of superego, in order to control the instinctual, because that's the only way he could now continue to exist, because he's been corrupted. A similar thing is happening over here. A very significant change is occurring with regard to the physical constitution of the environment, of the universe in which he exists, and most essentially, the Adam that emerges from the Teva is not the same person. Very, very dramatic changes have occurred. Most significantly, it'll be expressed in the fact you see that the lifespan of man begins to diminish, till it comes basically to where we're at today. And that is to say, if a person lives to 80...
Right, man, can you talk louder again?
If a person lives to 80, 85, that's a long life. All this is a result of the physical changes that occurred, because Adam, as that all-powerful being, who was the most powerful physical creature in the universe, could no longer sustain himself, because he had sinned irrevocably. Now, if you understand this, everything will fit in. It's a new Adam that emerges, and Adam too was affected by this. Adam too had a certain hachna, a certain subservience. And that's expressed by the fact, the idea, that these changes that have occurred, and which have affected people, have produced a certain subservience, is expressed by the fact that as soon as he gets off the table, he builds a car, he builds a mizbeach, and he brings a carbon. And that's the idea of Vayarach. Vayarach means that God took note of this new phenomenon, even within Noah. This new achnar, which, because the Torah doesn't describe that he brought carbonos before, right, he was an ishtarit, true. But this bringing of a carbon as a natural result expresses, this is really indicative. It doesn't mean that God smelled the clothes in the room, it means that God took note of this, God approved of this. It is this factor which is responsible for the fact that God will never destroy the world again, because the new element in Adam, that Adam will not ever achieve that state of a feeling of absolute supremacy, it's impossible for him ever to achieve that again to the extent and to permeate the entire world to the extent that it would produce that type of corruption. That's what it says. Now you understand the pasuk. Because Yetaleva Adam is Ra Minu'urav. Yeah, Minu'urav. As Rabbi Kate explained, Minu'urav means to say that feeling that we're talking about, that Ra, that feeling of absolute supremacy, that I'm going to live forever, that I'm the master of the universe. See, you have people that express that, but it's only in youth. That feeling is only in youth now. Because in youth, a person has that, some people have that feeling. Athletes and strong people, whatever they need, they're consumed with that, but it's only in youth. Then he gets a little older, and he gets an injury, an ankle, and this thing, and the other thing, and by the time he's 30, you can't sustain that feeling anymore. That's what it means, it's only manure. But if you go back to before, if you go back to the passage before, it was rock, kolayom, which means that feeling existed within him permanently, because there was nothing, he was so powerful, he didn't get ill. He didn't suffer from all these things. I mean, the new situation encompasses many things. If you take a look at the life of a person today, you see that there are some people that are extremely powerful and all of that, and they have this feeling of that they're filled with this feeling about themselves, but it's not sustained. I mean, even in youth, even guys in the yeshiva already, you have cold, you have sniffles, you have allergies, you have back pains, you have this, you have that. So the idea of immortality based upon the physical, it's impossible to sustain. It's a fundamental change in man. He's significantly humbled now, and that's really a blessing in terms of his spiritual life. Yes.
It says that Hashem said that after he smelt the offering, the korban.
Right.
So what does the korban have to do with that?
Yeah, that korban is reflective of that, symbolic of that.
Of what?
The korban means that man recognizes that everything comes from God.
Recognizes that what?
That everything comes from a Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's the whole essence of a korban.
So he's saying this recognition is going to become more of a... How does smelling the korban mean... How is that related to Hashem saying you won't destroy the world again?
I just explained it. The korban, the fact that he brings the korban, expresses this idea. The korban...
That man's going to have a greater recognition of God now?
It's man's subservience to God. Throughout the generation of the Mabel, there was no carbon, because to the contrary, people felt they didn't need God. They were the masters. So it's that activity which expresses it. You see?
So you mean now there's going to be more of a recognition of God?
Now there'll be more of a recognition of God, because that is to say like this. When man achieves a certain sense of self-confidence, of power, so then he denies God. But due to the fact that man can never again ever achieve that, not in a permanent basis. I mean, when he's young, momentarily he has this craziness, youthful craziness, but then he outgrows it. So that achna, that element of weakness which produces the achna and leads man to bring carbon, that is the element which is responsible for the fact that God will never destroy it again. Because it'll never come to that point again. Okay? Now, that expresses, you see, now you can understand the whole idea of a bracha. It's a new Adam that emerges. So therefore, God now, God gives this new Adam a blessing. It's not the same Adam anymore, so to speak. Puruvu, and so forth. But if you take a look, for example, what does it say? That I will place the fear of you on the animals. That's an amazing confirmation. What does that show? But originally, that situation didn't exist. God didn't have to place anything in terms of the animals because they were naturally inferior to man. Man was the most powerful being in the world. But now that man is much weaker than the animals, and the animals can destroy him, so there's a real danger. So therefore, he's placing the fear of him on the animals, because it's not the same being anymore. Also, for example, the permission to eat meat. That too seems to fit into this, because beforehand it says that he would plant once in 40 years. It means that there's such a fundamental change in the climatic conditions, which affects the produce and the fruits and so forth, so it's not that before he didn't eat meat. But now, it's different. Now it's not sufficient in order to sustain him, and now God is giving him permission to eat meat. That also is indicative of this idea. So basically, the overview is that the cause of the fate, the corruption, tremendous corruption, which led to the fate, had to do with man's tremendous physical power. And of course, he had Bechira. It's not that he didn't get, so why did God make him that way? I mean, that's Bechira. If he would have been able to overcome these emotions and to be intelligent, then he would have utilized all of that for the good. But he didn't. So therefore, it was necessary to make this fundamental change. As a result of this fundamental change, Adam can continue to exist. And now we can understand the idea of the rainbow. And this is the IK's explanation. I think it fits beautifully into this. And the idea of the rainbow only makes sense in terms of what we said, that the marble is two things. It's destruction and recreation happening simultaneously. That's what the Chazals are really trying to show. That there's water and there's fire, there's destruction and recreation. So what is the essence of the bliss? What is the hope of man that he won't be destroyed? It's the fact that his nature has been changed in such a way that, from a physical standpoint, it's disadvantageous, but from a spiritual standpoint, it's the factor which is going to save him. Because God now built into the situation certain preventions, certain safeguards that would prevent man from ever reaching that degree of corruption. So that's really expressed in the rainbow. Why the rainbow? The rainbow wasn't created for this purpose. The rainbow existed. But now it fits perfectly the idea. Because the idea of the rainbow is essentially that when you take water and you pass it over a prism, so it breaks down into different colors. And then when you remove it, the prism, so then it goes back to the same color. So what does that show? It's really a reference to the marble as the second creation. So there was, turns out according to this, that there were two creations. There was the original creation, and then there was the creation of the marble, destruction and recreation, so to speak. So, what is the hallmark of the first creation? The hallmark of the first creation is there was Yesh Me'ayin. Right? That God brought the world into existence from nothing. Yesh Me'ayin. But what was the hallmark of the second creation? Was that Yesh Me'ayin?
Yesh.
No. God simply brought a change. It was basically separation and recombination. Because the matter was the same. So it wasn't Yesh Me'ayin. But it was, as we said, separation and recreation. So really, the way I can't explain it, was that that's what the rainbow indicates. The rainbow is a phenomenon. When you separate, it goes into many colors, and you remove it, there's recombination. So that's the perfect expression, the perfect symbol, so to speak, of the new phenomenon. When a person looks at the rainbow and he thinks about that all the ideas associated with the marble, that it was a destruction and a recreation, and because of that recreation, Adam is now in a completely different physical matzav situation, so that he will always have a certain hachnah to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the factor, that's what he should remember. That's the factor which ensures his salvation, so to speak, in the sense that he won't be destroyed again. Okay, question.
How does that come from the rainbow?
Does anybody
understand
it? No. Nobody understands it?
Do you review the properties of the rainbow?
I can't hear you.
Do you review the properties of the rainbow and how it relates to the separation, the destruction, and recreation?
The rainbow, what happens in a rainbow? It's the phenomenon of...
The water is diffracted.
Right, so now you understand it, right? So that really expresses the idea of separation and combination. Right?
Okay, separation and combination, okay.
So that's the idea of the second creation. The second creation was not a creation of Yeshmiyayin. It partakes of that element that God, so to speak, broke down. There's the breaking down. Right? That's the destruction. In other words, when you recreate, let's say you have a house and you want to recreate it, so you break it down and then you recombine. You combine, recombine in a different way. So that those two elements are expressed in the phenomenon of the rainbow. So it's a perfect, so you have something in the world of nature which occurs from time to time, and it was designated by God as the perfect element to remind people of these ideas. That's why the rainbow, the sign of the rainbow, is the sign of God's Hashgacha, that God, recreated the world. Well, what's difficult?
Okay.
Is that clear to everybody?
Yeah.
Okay, any parting remarks?
Yeah, Rabbi Man.
Yes.
So the marvel was really like a correction?
Yeah, if you want to use that term.
Right.
I mean, that's a new, see, I covered a lot of things in a short period of time now. You have to really review them. It would have been better, perhaps. I don't know, it's not the forum in which to do this.
I'm just saying it was a correction in order to make all these changes that would keep his superego in check.
To keep his ego in check. Never mind his superego. To keep his ego. I mean, they all work together. But I think the basic ideas are not that complicated. The essential idea that the stronger a person becomes, the more powerful he becomes. So the more it goes to his head, and he feels like he's the master of the universe. So then there's a complete breakdown. There's an inability because he can't control himself anymore. And that's the situation which led to the tremendous corruption of the Dora Mabel. And the antidote to that, and I think this is a very important point, that it's not just a matter that God destroyed the wicked people and everything else is the same. You don't see that. You don't see that at all, because if that's the case, then why didn't people live 4,000 years after that? And all these other factors. Because what happens is that a new type of Adam emerges, the type of Adam that we can identify with. Okay?
Yeah.
Is there an idea that if a person sees a rainbow, he shouldn't be like publicizing it to other people?
What?
If a person sees a rainbow, he shouldn't publicize that to other people and tell them that there's a rainbow outside?
Yeah, I've heard that before. Where did you see that?
I think he's in the Shulchan Aruch.
Yeah, we gotta go through it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what's the reason?
Yeah.
Huh? I don't remember now. We'll have to go through it again, if you want. But what does that do with anything?
No, I was just wondering, if it seems like a good idea, the rainbow.
Yeah, that's my problem too. It seems like a good idea. I have to just get more, look it up and see what the reason is. To the contrary, you're right. It should be a good thing. And God designed it. If you go back to the Torah itself, the Pesukim itself, there's no indication that one shouldn't wear it. To the contrary. It's something which is good. That he needs this reassurance. That's a positive thing. Okay?
Rabbi?
Yeah?
I think there's a medrash. I didn't see it this time through, but I remember it that I think that during the marble, it washed away the ground, down to a certain level.
Yeah.
And that seems like I know it's a shaky to learn from Medrash, but it seems like a riot of what you're saying, that it was a different world afterwards.
Because he washed away
the ground means that he exposed a new part of the character of the world.
What's the Medrash again, though, right?
That the waters of the marble actually washed away one layer of the ground down to a few amos.
Yeah, good point. Good point. I think that with this idea, you'll see many of these midrashim, which will begin to make sense. But you're right. Well, what is the significance of that? Who cares?
It means he exposed a new aspect of the nature of worlds.
Exactly. All these midrashim fit in. Mm-hmm. Not even, once you have this idea, if you look at the Pesukim itself, that after the Mabo is a whole new reality here, because there's new laws coming into the picture. And there's another change that takes place, the fear of man and the animals. Why? That itself is a very powerful point. So the idea being that it's not just destruction, but it's destruction and recreation, and the objective of the recreation is to produce these types of changes, seems to be really, you know, very, very well grounded. And if you're, now you go to more Chazal, so I believe they'll fit into this context. All right, guys, have a good time.
What about Noach being taken out of the Teva?
I can't
remember. Remembered Noach in the Teva.
What about it?
We didn't answer that one.
So now think about it. Now you have more information.
Okay.
Before you were approaching it with limited information. Now with more information, maybe you can think of something.
Okay, okay.
Take care, guys.
Sure. Right, man?
Yes.
Can I ask you one question on
this? Yeah.
The analogy doesn't seem to be completely exact, because by the light, when it gets broken up, so it recombines to its original form, which was the original light. But over here, by mankind, it's true he got broken up, but when he gets recombined, it's not to the original form. It's
so you have a kasha.
What was
it
that?
It doesn't matter, though. It doesn't, for the purpose that it's supposed to serve, it doesn't have to be that exact. It doesn't have to be that exact. Obviously, you know what I'm saying? You're not going to have, bear in mind, it's a sign. In order to function as a sign, we're concerned with the essential idea.
Right.
But you're not going to be worried about every particularity. It's not like we're learning a sukkah and we have to answer up every question, you know? So,
right.
You're right, but in terms of the sign, it's perfect.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, guys, Shabbat Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
Take care.
Shabbat Shalom.
Bye.